Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Well, after a historic display of English stoicism and defence, I think it's only fair if we open up the podcast with a little bit of Paul Gustard's poem.
When you get what you want in the struggle for self, and the world makes you king for a day, go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say. It's not your father, your mother, your wife, or your friends whose judgment upon you will pass. The verdict that counts the most in the world, the one coming back from the glass. Or the world may say you're a straight-shooting chum and they may call you a wonderful guy. But the one in the mirror says you're a bum because you don't look me in the eye. He's the one you face. Forget the rest. You see, he's with you to the end. And you pass most dangerous, difficult test if the one in the glass is your friend. You may fool the world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass. But your final reward will be sorrow and tears because you cheated the one in the glass.
Hello and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, I'm filling in for Tim on presenting duties because he's busy rushing up from Wales to make it for our second podcast, which will be out with you on Tuesday, as well as a brand new Rugby Dungeon out on Wednesday. Subscribe separately for that one. This is your green and gold edition, meaning we are going to answer all the questions arising from the second test. Important questions. Why was a wizard dressed in a fox introducing Australia? Will Australia look at Jamie George to fill the role as second playmaker? Is Paul Gustard a genius? And will that poem, the poem that you've just heard, be a regular staple around Twickenham for many years to come? Before any of that, though, let's have a quick shout out to our sponsors, Cornerstone, who make everything we do down here in the Rugby Dungeon, Egg Chasers, and everything else possible. These guys are a provider of subscription razors. For as little as £4 a month, you can get your first order of high-quality German-engineered razors. Better than Wilkinson Sword, better than Gillette. Don't believe me, it's won some award in either national or international razor competitions, but that's very important. I always say, why waste the best technology on things like cars and aerospace? Why should Tim Peake have all the fun with all the gadgets when you can simply go to www.cornerstone.com/eggchasers or use egg10 at checkout and have your own fun with your own high-quality, high-tech razors. It comes, of course, with that wonderful aluminium shaft. You can have any initials you want. I prefer JB. You may choose your own. Thank you so much for everyone who's already signed up. Please, if you're thinking about it, go there, sign up, help support us, help support the pod. Really, really great people with a great product. Okay, fair to say I've left you waiting long enough. The next voice you hear will be Matt Rowley from the Green and Gold podcast getting us into this week's test. Enjoy the pod.
G'day and welcome to another Green and Gold Rugby special podcast with the Egg Chasers. It's a tough one, but we're going to try and grind it out.
This was a bad concept, Matt. I don't know why we agreed to this. Looking back at it, it was a mistake. And why are we going through with this?
I don't know, mate. Does it show character? I'm hoping. I think that's the one thing. It seemed like a great idea at the time. That's all I can say. Look, we're sponsored, as usual, by Sporple. Go find your talent, whether you need to get some players or you want to go somewhere and show your talent off. Go check out Sporple. It's free at the moment. But anyway, as you've heard, I've got Hugh here to give me a bit of support, a bit of solace.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough one, isn't it? why do we do this sometimes? It's just a game. There's other things in life. Can we do like a philosophy podcast or something? I feel like we should be grappling with more important things in the world than sport at the moment.
What's more important than this? As JB will tell you, mate, good to have you on. How are you?
Hello, boys. Yeah, good, thanks. You guys?
Well, yeah, we're on the podcast. I think we can at least say that.
Just
the
wait.
The man that I've been dreading to talk to.
Just wait now for the wave of smugness coming your way. A tidal wave of unbelievable, unstoppable self-gratitude. It's coming, boys.
A tsunami. Let the tsunami wave roll over us. Tim from a cafe in Wales. Mate, how are you?
Oh, good morning, one and all. You know what? It's really early on a Sunday morning, and I've never got out of bed so quick with such a spring in my step.
Is it nice and sunny down there in Wales, is it? Like the birds?
No, it's gloomy. There's someone walking past with an umbrella, but I'm in such a good mood.
I can't think of why. So look, Tim, to the victors, the spoils, mate. Tell us, how did you guys do it? How did England take this test quite so convincingly?
Well, you're right. Convincing it was. One thing I will say before I get going is I think it's just a shame that the 2015 World Cup was cancelled and never happened, because I think the England team could have done quite well. No, do you know what? I think the word I'd use to describe England in both Test 1 and 2 was streetwise. And you saw a very different England performance this weekend to last weekend, just as effective and streetwise, because we didn't commit at all at the breakdown this time. We just instead focused on a quick press to try and shut down the wide channels where Izzy Folau got so much success last week. So we dealt with the problem of last week, and I just think it all comes down to Eddie Jones, really. He's the reason we're so streetwise. He's just smart, and it shows what a real international coach with pedigree, the difference it makes with the same group of players.
Yeah, I mean, you had some players really step up and put their hands up. Who kind of stood out to you?
Well, yeah, you're right, all over the field. I mean, obviously, our six and a halves, maybe they do add up to 13 after all. It was so... you haven't seen Chris Robshaw... Well, you haven't seen anyone defend an oncoming attack like Chris Robshaw did since Hodor holding the door. It was a phenomenal effort. But behind the pack as well, I think that Farrell and Ford, that combination just keeps getting better and better. And I think that extra pair of eyes, that extra boot on the field, that extra decision maker, and they stepped up defensively as well. So I was just all over the pitch. They were heroes. But the back row and the 10-12 combination for me was a strength.
Yeah. And JB, what about you, mate? I mean, you know, you know these players. Who do you think came into their own?
Well, strange enough, I kind of agree with Tim. I think one of the masterstrokes of the entire game was Eddie Jones not using his bench. The Australians emptied their bench somewhere between 15 minutes into second half and about 20 minutes in. And then there was just continual pressure. I was certain that England were going to concede. And that almost gambler's instinct that Jones has to not use his bench, and then 10 minutes before the half, they bring on, what, four world-class forwards? I thought it was an absolute stroke of genius. A lot of credit has to go to Gustard, too. That defence, just the team ethic involved, is quite magnificent.
I mean, I think two things you guys touched on there. I thought the tactical kicking of Ford was sublime. The number of times, you know, whenever they were around about halfway, they'd always put themselves into the Australian 22 with a cross kick. And that man, Youngs, I thought at halfback, also had a good little kicking game as well. Just, pinning us back there. I thought they both did really, really well. And then that other bit you talked about then, JB, which was the gamble, when you brought the subs on. And you saw what, there's about three of those guys involved in that last try.
Yeah.
The reserve hooker kicking it through. I think it was, and Laws was the first guy who punched it up. Then it was the reserve kicker, hooker kicking it through. And then someone else kind of chased onto the ball. And finally, you know, Farrell got ahead of it. So, you know, I thought those things were absolutely vital to the whole game.
Matt, if I can just chip in there, I think JB's nailed it as well when he picks out Paul Gustard, the defence coach, who was the defence coach at Saracens. And it was just the quick press they had. Actually, England missed 30-odd tackles, but that's the way they play, because they press so hard and so fast. You're getting that little cappuccino machine in the background. Anyway,
right.
they that fast press just completely shut Foley down, and Australia didn't have that second playmaker, and they were so limited as to what they were able to do as a result. Yeah. That said, they had all the ball.
Yeah, look, I mean, so my take on it, I'll get your chime in on this in a second, Hugh, but I guess the way I've rationalised what happened to the game for Australia was, look, Australia's got no plan B. You know, we've really got no territory game. You know, Bernard Foley has only been like a 10 for about 3 years now, 3-4 years. Before that, he was a 15 and used to and then in 7. So we've got no real territory game. The only thing that we do is just play more plan A and play it faster and hope that that's going to overwhelm the opposition at the back end of the match. And that's what the Waratahs did through 2013, 14 and 15 when Czech was there. And the problem was that England A did have a great plan B and absolutely loved playing it with Ford and Youngs. That was just them back at home on a you know, what was a pretty awful pitch. I think it just suited them perfectly. B, I thought, you know, then slowed the ball like the All Blacks do. I mean, the number of times you saw Haskell just inadvertently falling backwards over the ball through a ruck, which is just, you know, a prime All Black move. And because we need to play at that pace, if you can just slow it for two beats,
yeah,
it just gives your defensive line that chance and gives you that chance to press, and it closes those holes and it stops, you know, negates that speed. And then the final thing I thought, which is Jones has obviously bought, is just that fitness to be able to do it. Like you said, JB, with the original team right through to like the 60th minute. And I think, you know, you saw on the telecast here, Nathan Gray came on and said at halftime, our whole plan is just to raise it again. We're just going to go faster and just, you know, get the, as he said, get pay in the back end of the match, which, you know, is code for, you know, we're going to have them run off their feet and we're going to be able to get through them. And they just couldn't. So the fitness was there.
Yeah.
Hugh, was that how you saw it or anything different?
Yeah, look, it's funny that we sit here and it's such divergent outcomes. You know, the English rightfully ecstatic and we're pretty down. And both games have been real knife-edge kind of games, even if the end score hasn't really reflected it. I mean, that game was really close and Australia had plenty of chances to take it, and as did England, and it was just England that took them better in the end. And so, you know, it's hard to say. I don't think the Australian game plan was massively off kilter because they had enough ball and enough position to score tries. It just was when they got to that last 10 metres, for whatever reason, they slowed down. They were, you know, lost composure. England defended well and we just didn't have any clever ways to get around it. And then we started turning down kickable penalties and all of it, you know, all of it, it was a super rugby attitude to what was a test match game.
Yeah.
And we pay the price for it. I don't think there was a huge amount wrong with anything Australia did up until that last 1-2%, you know, and that was where England would just had those answers in defense. England very much the deserving winners, and congratulations to them. It was probably the most impressive defensive display I've ever seen. I know they were so smart the way they chose to, as you said, Matt, chose to stand off the ruck, but when they picked their battles, they picked them so well. I mean, they've barely given away a ruck penalty all series. It's testament to their intelligence, of their back row, but their whole pack, their whole team. So it's hard. It's a hard feeling as a Wallabies fan, because you want to go back to the drawing board. You want to, you know, in your anger at losing a home series, you want to see 5-10 people dropped and all that sort of stuff. But actually, I feel like we had the game, and I don't mean to insult England at all when I say that, but I feel like we had the game won if we chose to win it, but we just, I don't know. We dropped ball. It's all coming back.
Yeah. Well, I thought there were two key decisions there, not to take points. Tim, would England have turned down those points?
Oh, well, in a World Cup game against Wales, yes, unfortunately, but no, absolutely not. And yeah, I was absolutely baffled, and I think Hugh nailed it. It was a super rugby approach to a test match. 6 points down, 15 minutes to go, closed the gap to 3 with a kick on the 22 in front of the post. What international team doesn't take 3 points there? I cannot understand it. And I'd have been livid if that was Dylan Hartley making that call.
Exactly. JB, you see it any different, mate?
No, I think Hugh is spot on. This game, I think, if it's played 10 times, I think it'd be about, 5-4. The approach Australia took, I think, is probably a more sensible approach than the approach that England took. Because if we look back at the game, England had to make 3 times more tackles, roughly, than Australia. I mean, they were under siege. Now, if anything, they might have even got lucky to a certain degree. Because how long can you keep that work rate up for? It's a huge ask. And I think that goes back to one of the reasons Jones is so clever to use his subs right at the end. But I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with what Australia did. And if I was them, I would continue down exactly the same path.
Yeah. I thought there was some... I think Q was right there. There was that kind of... There was a couple of percentage plays that were missing. I mean, I think... So you take that first penalty, you don't know that we're going to get the second penalty. But if you're in an alternate universe and you say it's 13-13 in the back end of that match, then I think you're in a very different situation. And I think suddenly standing off rucks and things like that doesn't feel so easy if you're England. I think the whole match looks a lot different. And so I was really surprised by that game management. I must admit, because it was two different captains, Hooper and Moore, decided at different times, I've got to think that was a discussion they'd had as a team, which said, if we're in this situation, this is what we do. We keep the foot on the throat, we stay down that end, and we try and go for the points. I mean, the other thing was, just with the amount of ball that they had close to the England line, I really felt we missed that. Again, we missed that second playmaker. There'd been a big conversation going on here in Australia for ages now. Do we need a second playmaker, or do we put another player in? I thought Karevi had a great game. I thought he did everything that was asked of him. But I think, when you're in that situation where you need to find that space, put someone through a gap, and you've only got one man who can do it, which is, who is Foley. I mean, I felt we kind of, we were missing at that point. Hugh, has it made your mind up on this?
Yeah, well, I haven't for different reasons. I actually think the kicking game was where we most lacked that second person. I mean, it was amazing to me that I think, 99% of the time that we passed it back to Foley or Haylett Petty, who was our sort of second kicker, the amount of times there was 3 people on it and he was narrowly avoiding a charge down. And actually, once he did, Otoje charged him down at one point. But the amount of, he was under pressure, had to rush the kick and just get it away. That was why our kicking game was ineffective. It was just we didn't set a good enough platform where we didn't have that second option to be able to step up and take the pressure off Foley and to keep that defence in 2 minds as to who's actually going to get the ball. Yeah. And that was, made it so hard to get out of our own half. But, look, it's one of those things. I mean, Christian Lielefano has played good minutes in both games and has, you wouldn't know he was out there. So it's a tough one. I think in an ideal world, we needed that second playmaker, but I'm not sure Lielefano is that guy. So yeah. It's tough. It's tough. I don't know. I don't know what we need. I think our team balance is more or less right. It's just those one percenters that we lacked.
So, I could maybe add from an English perspective, when I think about playing against Australia, and over the past decade, you think about playing against guys like Gitto, exactly as Hugh kind of hinted at, it must, and from my perspective as a supporter watching, but as a player on the field, it must mean you're not sure who to run at, where it was absolutely obvious you put the pressure on Foley, you shut down Foley, you shut down everyone outside him. So that's clearly what Eddie Jones targeted. That's clearly what the England team were doing, and it clearly worked.
Yeah, no, definitely. Look, there were 3 reffing decisions in here, which I'm not necessarily going to say are wrong, because I think I can see how he got to the end decision, but I must admit they were quite surprising in that you don't see them every day of the week. So Jeff, that came from Joubert. And so JB, I'd be interested in your view on them. The first one that I thought, oh, blimey, you don't see that often was, it was like in the first couple of minutes when he penalised Kepu for pushing somebody in a line out that hadn't even started yet. And it was like, oh God, I mean, okay, there's always someone pushing someone in a line out as it's setting up. So I was really surprised by that. Then there was the time that he overturned, he said, oh, there were 2 penalties running against England. And then he ended up completely overturning it, saying that Moore had come in late, at a breakdown. And then the final one was when Owens had said, hey, I think you need to look at some foul play.
Oh, I love that.
When Foley got pushed over, Joubert has a look at it and goes, oh, no, you know what? Actually, I'm going to penalise him for shepherding. Yep. So, JB, what was your take on those three?
Well, do you know what? Have you not missed the biggest one, which was the Rob Shaw high, like, round the neck, wrestling to the ground.
Yeah.
I thought this was incredible. This is the most exciting thing from a referee that I've seen God knows how long. So, Rob Shaw's arm goes around the neck of, I think it's Foley. Or maybe maybe the halfback.
Phipps.
Pulls him to the floor. someone else does something stupid next. I can't remember who, but basically it's one penalty against England. So it's already a penalty against England. They commit another penalty, and then Stephen Morecambe comes in and gets two penalties reversed because of one. That is perverse. That is absolutely perverse. I mean, what is the message that they're sending here? If one of your team gives a penalty away, everybody dive in immediately with your own illegal shots, because if someone retaliates, we'll get away with it.
Yeah, it was. I thought that was. But I think I guess the thinking there is that it's the last one that's occurred. I mean, I guess it's not a balance of someone's committed four penalties, we've committed three, so then therefore we get one. I guess the thinking is, but it just seemed perverse, including the fact that he actually looks at it. He looks at a guy go around someone's neck.
Yeah, I thought it was yellow.
And says, oh, yeah, and goes, oh, no, that's just a penalty. And there's only two of them. I mean, look, Tim, I mean, I guess I'm thinking you must have been thinking there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, we have a little mantra on our podcast, Matt, which is let the boys play. And and I'm all for just... I loved it in that first 5 minutes when it was a flare-up and there were 20 guys piling in. Yeah. And I hate it when I see on Twitter people going, oh, this is a disgrace, Loris. I love all that.
Yeah.
So kind of, I just think, just get on with it. I will say, and to make it easier for you as an Aussie chiming in about the ref after you've lost, I thought Joubert had a poor game. And England did get the rub of the green on some decisions. But I think a lot of what you just described was kind of petty. Well, for one, Nigel Owens, I think, come on, just get on with it. There was nothing to see there, and there was nothing to overturn there. Just get on with it and play was generally my response. The one about the net grab and pull and then turnover, I can see why you'd be annoyed about that. It was crazy. I didn't think Joubert covered himself in glory at all.
Yeah, but
can I have my minute? I've got to say, and you've got to say at the start, anytime you talk about the referee, even in a constructive manner, which of course is going to be very constructive, England better team deserved to win. Joubert didn't affect the result, right? No. That you got to say that. And so I don't want to sound like I'm blaming the ref for what happened, but the three you mentioned, Matt, were all justifiable under the law. I understand those decisions, but what it was symptomatic of was just every 50-50 just went to England, you know? And they're all justifiable 50-50s, but they just all went their way. And I was banging my head on the wall by the end of it. It's just frustrating. It's not, you know... And then there was little things like, so I'll give you my couple more, Matt. These are mine that I think are worse.
Mm.
End of the first half, we have a penalty on the English line. Advantage for a penalty on the English line. About sort of 15 in from touch, very kickable. At 10-17, would have leveled the scores up before half time. We have 2 or 3 minutes of possession, not going anywhere, one out. Spread the ball, but nothing really eventuates. And Joubert calls advantage over. We've gone backwards. We've gone 5 metres backwards. We lose the advantage, knock the ball on, that's half time. I don't know under what planet. I've seen so much rugby over the last year that I don't know why advantage is over in that case. That's, you go back for the penalty every time there. And so we've just cost us a shot at 3 points after half time. That really annoyed me.
If you would have taken three points.
Look, Foley would have shanked the kick. It's about the principle. It's not, you know. There was another.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's where he gave us advantage for a penalty under the post, but then recanted his advantage and gave us a penalty on the touchline. He blew up our advantage and he looked like he was about to sin bin Mike Brown and he didn't. So we kind of, he stopped our play for a sin bin that never actually happened. Mm. I don't know. It was just, it was all the little things. Nigel Owens once, you know, Nigel Owens told him about an offside in the England backline from a line out that would have given us a penalty 20 metres in front of the post and he ignored it, didn't blow it. Like, and I'm sure all of them are justifiable. You know, you take decision by decision. I don't think his decisions were necessarily bad. Just all went England's way, and that's the end of my whinge. England, better team, deserve to win, but I need my whinge time.
But you know, there. So you know why I think those 50-50s didn't go our way was because we were in the shit list with the ref, and I can understand why. So
yeah,
I think we were rattled. So England's attitude, I think, in the first test definitely had us on the back foot. I think you saw our guys, and I think Moore was probably more than anyone else thinking he needed to kind of lead it, decided he wasn't going to take a backward step. Every time there was any sort of niggle, everyone had to pile in because there was no taking a backward step being the mantra. And you just heard us going at the ref the whole time. And throughout the match, you can hear Joubert says to the Wallabies, it must be half a dozen times, stop shouting at me. Stop shouting at me. I'm going to, you know, someone's going to get in trouble next.
No, it's not-
and I just think... they gave him the shits, frankly. And
Is that the bit? There was a really interesting bit. And I think it's about the time, just before half-time, Joubert's got his mic on and he's stood next to Moore. And I'm sure that they're talking about the scrimmaging. And they have a little conference. And I'm sure that Joubert says to Moore, yeah, I know, mate, they're really frustrating. Now, I actually took that as him telling Moore that he was frustrated with the English scrum collapsing, or have I got that completely wrong?
No, well, I can't remember that conversation, but I do know they had.
I remember the one where Joubert said, "All 15 people are talking at me.
Yeah,
please shut it down."
Yeah,
but are we going to
another 3-4 times?
But I mean, we were lucky. We got away with. I mean, let's talk Sandgate. I mean, Hooper was lucky not to be red carded and banned for life.
Oh, under today's climate,
with
absolutely.
A fistful of sand. Yeah, well, I mean, we got away with that one.
Oh God, I'm so glad we can put that to bed, and there was an alternative angle because there was loads of keyboard warriors going crazy about that.
I enjoyed it.
What did that angle prove though? It's like the grassy knoll and, you know, JFK. I mean, did that? I need a third angle. I need something else.
The only thing it proves to me is that Hooper is a massive fan of the film Gladiator. Outside of that, I'm not entirely sure. Do you know what? I liked it. You pay the man to win. So if he wants to throw some sand, let him throw some sand. It's actually quite inventive.
Yeah.
Well, I love it because in this game where, you know, where we've got Stephen Moore flying shoulder charging people on the ground and we've got Rob Shaw just basically trying to break Nick Phipps' neck and all of this, you know, stuff that goes on in a hard-fought test match. And we, for some reason, get up in arms about a fistful of sand thrown in, not even in the face of someone, but just like that was any danger to
it was
him
the
at
intent,
all.
Mate. Intent.
We're allowed to break people's limbs on both sides, but
and it probably,
sand, no.
It probably brings up that the only person who probably had a worse day at the office than Craig Joubert was the groundsman in Melbourne.
Yeah,
yeah, what is that about? God. That's an absolute disgrace.
Well, the thing is, it's not the first time. So anytime anyone's pretty much played there this season, it's been the same result. So I don't know why anyone was expecting it to be any different, except that obviously the groundsman has said, oh, yeah, no worries, fellas, it'll be fine. And it was an absolute shocker. Now, look, JB, you reminded me of something.
Okay.
Which was England scrummaging.
Yes.
Can Dan Cole keep up a scrum?
Oh, jeez.
Ooh, interesting.
I mean,
I don't think it's important.
I'm going to put a gift together.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you now, I don't think it's important anymore. I think it used to be. I don't think it is now. And I think you might even have yourselves to blame, unfortunately. I mean, the experimental laws which have been playing around within the Southern Hemisphere basically mean, as soon as the ball's at the eight, do what you want, collapse a scrum. As long as it's usable, you can use it. And that's why, you know, from a Welsh point of view, we're seeing Gethin Jenkins starting to play rugby again. Because as soon as the ball's to the eight, you collapse it and then you can move it. So it's kind of a moot point. He doesn't need to stay up. He just needs to get the ball back to number eight and then play. It's in the new rules, and I think that's the way that they're going to play from now on forever.
Yeah. So come on, Tim, I'll let you come back on this one, because it was obviously one of the big talking points during the week was Dan Cole. And now, whether it was him or whether it was Scott Seo, that was dropping those scrums last weekend. Do you think we got any further forward in unravelling that mystery last night?
Well, I think in Test 1, it was CO being too long-legged. Mm. I've played at hooker, so I kind of know a little bit about what's going on in the front row. Not masses, but not like an international prop, obviously, but I thought CO was too long-legged and made it easy for the referee. And probably actually, Dan Cole, and that word I'll keep coming back to with relation to England was streetwise. I actually wonder whether Dan Cole had planned to take the hit passively and let CO move forward and fall flat on his face. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a tactical thing with Neil Hatley, the England scrum coach, because I'm sort of with JB. I think that it's such a lottery all the time. You might as well have a ref with a magic eight ball just shaking it and giving a decision whichever way he wants. I actually just think that in preparation and in execution, England were just more streetwise or created the sense of doubt not on their shoulders. How they manage that, I don't quite know, but it's damn impressive to watch.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. I completely agree with you and how it all worked out. But yeah, I just think it's interesting watching again. Like I said, I just finished watching it today, and it's hilarious. I mean, like I said, I don't know whether you put together a video of each scrum dropping in exactly the same way. But in the end of the day, like you guys both said, no one cared. Ball was at the eight's feet and it just went. Mm. That's kind of where we've got to as far as the game's concerned.
Yeah, and that's quite an alien concept to us Northern Hemisphere fans, because we're running by these new laws for the first time coming down to your neck of the woods. And yeah, I think JB's absolutely right. That is a sign of things to come. The scrum halves don't feed, so it's not a true contest there. So to avoid a pushover or getting a proper nudge on, I think you're going to see more of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, guys, I mean, I think we've probably pulled that test apart, unless anyone else had any part of it that they wanted to get stuck into.
There was one more probably bit. There was one tiny bit. I want to just talk a little bit about Stephen Moore. Well, two bits, actually. First of all, mm-hmm. Stephen Moore. Do you think it was a wise decision for Stephen Moore to try and be this abrasive captain? Which I'm not sure that's his character. I don't know much about him. But I do know he's going up against the most abrasive man probably in world rugby, in Dylan Hartley. I just thought it was a complete fool's errand to try and play Dylan Hartley at Dylan Hartley's own game.
And do you mean about that, like, on the field in contact, or do you mean, like, in his relationship with Joubert?
No, just all the niggle actually on the field, because you're never gonna be able to out Hartley. He's done it all. He's done the gouging. He's done a bit of biting. He swore at the ref. Moore's not even in his league. He might be a better rugby player.
I don't remember seeing a lot of niggle from Hartley in this series. Actually, I don't think he's been the one that's got under. I don't think he's been the one that's got under the Aussie skins. I think it's probably been more like a Todje, and a few of the others. I mean, Hugh, where are you on that one as far as Steve Moore's captaincy?
Yeah, no, I'm with JB there. I think he's made a really good point. It's what I made in my article after the game. I don't like it. I think it cost us. You know, that penalty where he just flew in and reversed it, what was a kickable shot, you know? That was 3 points pretty much. I mean, yeah, Foley would have shanked it, but it probably would have cannoned off both posts and somehow got over. We can't be doing that. You know, that's not the way we play rugby. There's niggle and then there's that when you're getting penalties overturned. And it's just from our captain, I expect better. And I don't think he plays well. He was off his game. And a part of me thinks he was so focused on this being abrasive and physical and not taking a backward step that he actually forgot what he was out there to do. Mm. And then, you know, Pelotta now, for me, looked a lot better when he came on than what Moore did. So, yeah, look, I totally agree. I think it's not our style and it just detracts our focus. I don't think we gain anything from it ever.
Mm. And if I could just chip in and add to that, I think that last sentence, Hugh, you just said was on the money. It's not our style. And I think it's really interesting looking at the identity of teams. And I think ironically enough, as an Aussie, what Eddie Jones has done is actually created a really English identity with this team. Really, really real conviction and real a bit nasty up front and uncompromising. And we play territory first and we have a strong set piece. What I always think of when I think of Australia is arrogance, but in a good way, arrogance that actually you don't need to get involved in all that niggle because you think you're great, you know you're great, and when it's on, you're clinical and you turn it on. And I think they've just, maybe that's where they were in the World Cup. I think you just lost that Aussie identity that I always think of when I think of Australian teams.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think the Wallabies and Steve Moore is kind of the leader of the Wallabies. I think we just got, you know, knocked back a step. We've been on the back foot since that first test. I think they've come back and said, oh, we just can't get knocked back again. And the only way we can do it is by kind of getting on the front foot. And it just hasn't worked out for them. And it's really interesting. I think they're at sixes and sevens, whereas, you know, in the World Cup, it was very much just keep your head down, you know, play hard, you know, don't try and get involved in too much crap. And I think they've lost their way there. And it seems to me, I know the big focus in camp was this, they've got this phrase, this saying, D-tabs, which is don't take a backward step. I think, you know, which D-tabs. Is kind of the idea that it's kind of mixed in with this sort of aggressiveness. And I'm not sure that that's, you know, paying off or is paying off for them. So I guess that leads us on to, so what next? And I'll throw this to you, Tim. Again, Victor with the spoils and all. What happens for this next test? Does England need to do anything? Just more of the same? And maybe you can give us a bit of a clue here and say, look, you know, what do the Wallabies need to do?
Okay, well, firstly, on England, I think that a lot of people will assume that, oh, you know, the other guys that have come on tour, let's give them a game, give them a run out. I really hope we go for the jugular and go and just pick the best team we can and try and whitewash it. I think that's what Eddie Jones will do. Albeit it will mean some guys don't have rugby, but I just think that's the best thing for the team long term. We know that Haskell and Noel are going to be out, which is going to open up a couple of opportunities.
Is that right?
As for Australia, yeah, they're both out of the third test. As for Australia, I think, again, if I just talk about that identity, I think that second playmaker pair of eyes. I actually agree with what you said earlier that Karevi had a decent game, but it made it all too easy to put all that pressure on Foley, and the Foley looked so much better when he had Gitto outside him because he had Gitto outside him, and I think that is that's the way that's going to suit the speed that Australia want to play out, having that get out of jail free card for Foley if he's getting the quick press from England. So I do that straight away, and I agree with Hugh that Pelotta now is the guy that's probably earned a starting test jersey, to name but one.
Wow. Well, that would certainly be a turn-up if the captain got put on the bench for TPN to come on. But, yeah, I mean, he's been having some bullocking runs. By the way, I was just enjoying some of the sacks there you had in the background, Tim. nice on a Sunday.
Yeah, well, I can go and they sell CDs in Starbucks. I can go and buy you one if you want to send it over.
Do you guys realise we don't have Starbucks in Australia?
What?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. No, well,
they shut down, didn't they?
Yeah. No, we don't have. We do not have coffee chains here.
What?
So
Gloria Jeans. We got Gloria Jeans, but they're very isolated. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we just don't do them. So yeah.
So are you all about? Are you all about the?
Sorry, where are you guys calling in from? Like Rwanda or somewhere? What kind of civilized country doesn't have coffee chains?
Oh no, we've taken it to the next level, mate. Yeah, no. So because obviously coffee chains, the first thing that happens is the coffee goes shit. So yeah, they're by and large independents, all with beards and tats and stuff like that, making
a bunch of Jack Knowles serving you coffee.
Exactly. Yeah, he would fit right in. So JB, give us a clue, mate. What do we need to do next? How does Australia pull this one around and avoid your prediction of 3-0?
Well, I don't think it will be 3-0, actually. I mean, that's my original prediction. I think I'm going to change that. Just because it's going to be...
4-0?
Yeah, 4-0. 4-0. It's going to be a straightforward race now to... can Australia improve on what they were doing, which is that super rugby style of rugby? And can Gustard improve the defence even further? Because you've seen a step between the first test and then the second test, and now going into the third, it's going to be this straightforward contest. And I don't think they've actually shown me enough to say they can repeat that performance of keeping Australia down to one try. I think it's an almost impossible task. So if you get out in front, I'm not entirely sure that England have got what it takes to score enough points. So I'm going to revise my prediction, say it's going to be 2-1, because this third one's going to be ferocious. Oh, and is it in Sydney, by the way?
Yes.
It's in Sydney.
I'm going to be there.
I mean, I think the most interesting question about this test, actually, is who's going to give you permission to play? Because the first test you had the kindly lady. This week you had, I think, was it a wizard? A wizard wearing a fox?
We can't make jokes about this, JB. It's you understand the sensitivity straitjacket we're kind of in.
I was absolutely.
Yeah, they pulled the internet on us straight away.
I was absolutely stunned that this man was even on a rugby pitch. So I can only assume that this week you're going to be introduced by, I'm guessing, some sort of homosexual transgender to play rugby in Sydney. That kind of sounds about right. So that to me is probably...
What would be wrong with that?
Absolutely nothing. And you should absolutely ask permission off every minority group to play rugby for some reason which is unknown to everybody else in the world. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Yes.
You see what I have to live with every week.
But what is it, boys? Why do you need to put us all through it?
It's a perspective that we're not allowed to provide, I think, here. But it's valid. I think I can't say I pay a huge amount of attention to the pregame stuff anymore. Now I just kind of mute it and focus on just trying to lower my blood pressure until I can turn off.
What happened to
everything and get the game started?
What happened to the days when Australia was just the pre-match was loads of dignitaries and gold scarves? That's what I liked.
Yeah, well, and then John, was it John Williamson strumming "Waltzing Matilda"? You know, basically the whitest song that we've got. it used to be, and now they've stopped that.
Have you stopped singing "Waltzing Matilda"?
Yeah, no, that doesn't happen anymore. No.
Oh, that is disgusting.
Oh, yeah, banned.
Oh, banned. It's not banned. It's just no one sings it anymore. We're not the town from Footloose. We have some things that we're allowed to do, but sing waltzing. But that kind of went out a bit. That was a real early 2000s thing.
Sorry, guys. Have you guys watched the game at Twickenham?
Yes. Yeah, I have many.
I mean, that's a very, very formal affair. It's so formal, and everyone has to wear mustard chinos.
Love it.
and blazers, to the extent that they've tried to make it cool and young and hip by just having this weird graffiti font all around the stadium.
Oh, well, that must balance it out, surely.
There's another one I pet hates.
JB on a
oh, yeah, urban youth fonts all over the stadium to make it feel more inclusive and accessible to underprivileged communities. What nonsense. Anyway.
Well, it goes right with the marching band they have as well, you know, just before the kickoff as well. That goes right with the graffiti theme, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, really. Absolutely bang. So does the extreme wealth of everyone that lives around Twickenham Stadium in their driving around in their Chelsea tractor.
I tell you what,
Rovers.
the net worth of that crowd is unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it is. I've been there and it's quite amazing. And the rugby knowledge is unbelievably low.
Oh, well, rugby is a distant second to the networking.
Yeah.
Distant second.
It's all about the pork pies in the car park before the match, guys. Didn't you know? Come on.
Yeah. Well, I always used to have like a nice E. coli burger. you know, those ones that you can smell the onions about half a mile away after a good few pints down at the eel pie near the river. Used to be my way in. Whereas Sydney this weekend, it's going to be because it's kind of right in town and it's near Oxford Street. Lots of nice dining, so it's going to be a big late lunch here. Lots of red wine, and so we'll be nicely numbed by the time we get in. So it'll be interesting. Look, just getting back to the match briefly, I agree with you, Tim, is that I think Eddie's going to want to go for the jugular, and I think he'll think the best way to, you know, grinding this one out, I don't think he'll be so appealed by. I think he'll be really looking for, like, for them to stick a few tries on and say, hey, we didn't just win this through defence. We could also stick some tries on you. I think he's going to be looking for that as just one final screwing with our mind. So it'll be interesting to see if he can do it. Hugh, have you got any confidence that we're going to be able to hold him out?
Yeah, I actually am a little bit bullish about this game. I think Australia will win and might win comfortably. I just think they've got so much more to play for. You can talk up, you know, yeah, we want to win. England want to win 3-0. But you can't tell me they might not just take it a little bit easier this week at training. You know, end of a long season. You've had a great victory. You bask in the spoils. And deservedly so. I don't think I'd. But whereas the Wallabies, I think Checker has got to be out beating them every single hour of the day. And they've got to be hurting. I mean, from the reading the post-match comments, they're hurting. And I think they've got a lot to play for. And I think England have already proved that they're fantastic. And it would surprise me if they approach the game with the same intensity that they have the first two. Whereas I think Australia might actually up the ante a little bit. So, yeah, I think it'll be a hollow 2-1 series. But I think Australia might look to take some positives into the rest of our international season. So, yeah, a bit hollow to tip them now, but I feel like this might be their game.
Okay, well, there you go. Yeah, I think you are quite bullish on that one as well, but I would hope we could edge this one, having had two games kind of go against us. In a lot of ways, you look at it and kind of go, how? But hopefully we can pull this one around, but we'll see. I think hopefully it'll be another cracking match. So all I can say, look, until next week, fellas. And Tim, I hope the rest of your day, the sun continues to shine and you enjoy it. I think you'll be on top of the world for the rest of this week.
Well, yeah, I've actually got my family just stood outside the window of this coffee shop. It's Father's Day here today. Do you have the same Father's Day as us in Australia?
No.
No, well, yeah, so I'm just going to go and treat myself to a huge, huge breakfast and yeah, maybe a beer in a bit. Yeah, I'm pretty happy. Looking forward to it. And for the record, I actually think it's going to be... I actually think it will be 3-0 now. I don't think that just winning a series and just winning 2-0 is total redemption for the pain of the World Cup. So I actually still think the England team will be fired up. And having seen what I've seen the last 2 weeks from both sides, I've got a sneaky feeling we might edge it.
Bloody hell. So anyway, we've made the cocky pom... cocky again. So there you go. I think it was 2-1 our way, wasn't it? Only a few weeks ago. But
I know. I'm as amazed and pleased as anyone.
And boys, can I just leave you with my parting bit of wisdom? If in any way you lads are a little bit depressed this week, just remember your national team did not go down to at least 5 tries against the Waikato Chiefs.
That is true. That does
actually. Hey, don't shave yourself. The Chiefs are a bloody good side.
Sorry, Waikato Chiefs reserve team.
Would be close. Yeah, well,
in a midweek. Yeah. Okay. No, that does make me feel better, actually, JB. Yeah. And so, on that note, thanks for joining us, fellas. Good to talk to you again, and we'll have a yarn with you next week.
Sound. All right, boys.
Bring it on.
So that was us with the Green and Gold podcast. Matt Rowley and the boys. We will be back doing that again next Monday, but remember, tomorrow is your normal Egg Chasers, and Wednesday we're back in the Rugby Dungeon to interview more players.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I will see you tomorrow. Thanks a lot. Goodbye.